everyone you encounter has a lifetime of stories and a lifetime of experience that you just don't know about.
Hello, welcome to the Just Know Though podcast. I am your host, Brandon, and our co-host, Jennifer, and our guest, D'Angelo, are here with us. I'm just going to say welcome, D'Angelo. D'Angelo is a friend of mine from medical school, and I told him a little bit about the podcast that Jennifer and I are doing, and he agreed to answer a little bit of the curiosity-driven questions that we have. D'Angelo is a medical student, but also a very talented artist, as we'll dive into a little bit about his drum life and making jewelry and all things creative. So, D'Angelo, welcome to the Just Know Though podcast.
Yes, sirski.
We're happy you're here, dog.
I appreciate y'all, man. Thanks for having me. Like I said, I was telling y'all before, this is my first podcast, so I'm excited.
I'm excited, too. You sound, reading your preform, you just sound so, like, talented, and also you're able to reflect and be very, like, unapologetic. And for me, as, like, a female looking in, and it's really cool to, like, have a male perspective of also that kind of that journey. It's dope. I'm excited for this episode.
I appreciate you. We'll probably dive a little into how I think I might be a little too introspective at times, but you know, we'll touch on it.
All right.
Let's dive right in with that one, because that seems like a good place to really just kind of set the tone for what it'll look like. Because I feel like these conversations are just kind of full off, especially with the depth of perspective. What do you mean by that, thinking that you're too introspective sometimes?
Yeah, I feel as if, I guess because I spent so much of my upbringing being extrospective, like worried about what people think about me on the daily with every motion that I take. Even to this day, I still have some of that self-consciousness and I guess unease with how I present to other people, making sure that I'm making sure everybody is comfortable around me and not offended in any way. So like the extrospection was super strong from birth, growing up religious as well. So worried about how people see me, like how people perceive my actions and if they think I'm a sinner or going to hell for something that I've done or ways that I think. So switching that from the extrospective when I finally got to like college age, I guess, was when I started to question all of those foundations that were set from like my parents beating the Bible into me from a young age. And then finally kind of being able to question those beliefs within my own head, which led to a domino effect of every belief that I've had thus far. So religion started it as the catalyst, but then going to like sexuality and like checking in with myself on sexuality things, because you just kind of come up thinking like, yeah, of course I'm straight. Like what you mean? Like, you know, come with an attitude if anybody questions that. And some of that is kind of reflexive from in high school, just because I had a lot of girlfriends, like a lot of friends that were girls. I didn't feel comfortable with a lot of dudes necessarily, like not the same interests and stuff. Like middle school, high school, a lot of people called me gay and I kind of took that as offense. But in my introspective years in college, I was like, so what does that really mean? Like, is it just, am I saying that in reflex, or do I need to like do deep dive and make like, you know, check in that I'm still straight, but it's just like going through that process. And sexuality is a good one because it makes people uncomfortable to kind of think about that sometimes, to think about that level of their identity. Like, oh yeah, of course I'm straight. Like, what do you mean? And I had that within myself for sure. But when you go in and break it down and like, oh yeah, like question, is that something that I believe in? Is that something I identify with in every realm of your identity? I think there's some fruit to be gained from that. And I think I wrote down in my little like preview about like knowing yourself so thoroughly to the point where you can have a foundation to be able to express yourself then to other people. Like if you don't know yourself to a deepest degree, then you won't be able to accurately express yourself through your creativity or through your works or things like that. So that's why I think I get a little obsessive with knowing myself, because I like want to break down every aspect of like, why do I do that? Or why do I interpret things a certain way? Or why do I walk a certain way? You know, just breaking down everything that could possibly be broken down within myself can be a little obsessive.
Yeah, it almost sounds like this you know, thought concept or whatever it is, it almost sounds like an analogy would be like you're kind of at a pivot point with binoculars on, kind of gauging to see what you were told you were or who you were told you were. And then you're kind of, because you do reflect and you do think and you do question things and look for answers, it sounds like that allows you to reflect on like, who do I think I am based off your experiences?
Right.
What would you, so now that we're at this kind of pivot point where you have gained this, you have like gained access to like this part of yourself through like thinking, so tell us a little bit about the background that you did have growing up, like a little bit about, you know, who D'Angelo was up to this point type deal.
When anybody asks me like who I am, I default to telling them that I'm an army brat. Like both my parents were in the army. I was born in 92, so I'm turning 30 this year. Don't make a big deal out of it. Yeah, you know, it's fine. So both my parents were in the army. They met in the army. They got married in Denmark. My mom retired when I was born. And so she started working government service and things like that. That is such an ingrained part of my identity because her time in the service, she served in the in Desert Storm War in Saudi Arabia in like 91, late 90s, 91. When she got out of the army, about 10 years later, we started noticing her have like a limp. Like she was super active, right? So she would run like 4 or 5 miles a day. She was super into her body. Her dad was a black belt in some martial art, but he would always have her like, you know, out training and stuff when she was young. And so we always knew mom as like, you know, a warrior type. She was always running and getting after it and taking care of her body. But then we noticed she started having a limp. Her vision started going out. It just was weird. So we got her checked out. Eventually we found out that she had multiple sclerosis, MS, which is a neuro disease. Basically your white blood cells start attacking the lining on all of your nerves, especially in your spinal cord and in your brain. So when we found that out, I was about 10, 11 at the time. And she came home with that diagnosis from her, I guess it was a neurologist, I'm not really sure. And she kind of told me more about like, yeah, this is just kind of going to be a progressive thing. There's no cure for it. People deal with it all the time. You just kind of progressively, slowly start to wilt away. At the time, the internet it was there, but I was 10 years old, so I couldn't really do that much as far as research. But she came back with that info and I was like, well, I guess I'm gonna be a doctor so I can fix you. So that was kind of the very beginning of my journey to get to med school. And then through that kind of changing some things as to what I exactly wanted to do with my life, started out wanting to be a neurologist so I could like do multiple sclerosis research. Then I wanted to be a neurosurgeon so that I could possibly work with my hands to fix some people with MS. And now that's changed up quite a bit. I want to actually focus more on the pain aspect. So eventually want to do like a chronic pain career path so I can treat people with all types of chronic pain, but especially those with MS and other neurodegenerative diseases as well. You know, that all of that to say that when I say that I'm an army brat, that has just such like direct influence in how I identify, especially like my career path thus far. And then my creativity also kind of stems from my career path too. So that just kind of was the root of everything, and everything else blossomed kind of from that, of my identity being an army brat. We moved around all the time, every couple years till I was in high school. And then from sophomore high school to basically when I moved out to Kansas City for med school, but that was like the longest I had ever stayed in one place. It was about 10 years. But before that, it was anywhere from a year here, 2 years there, up to like 4 years elsewhere, but definitely moving around a lot as a kid. And all that time, like I said before, a very religious family as well. So my dad was like a preacher of sorts. He was always like wanted to start churches and be involved in the ministry. And my mom was a missionary. That's kind of how they met in Germany. They were both involved in the church at the time. So army brat, religious upbringing, those are kind of the cores of where I come from. Yeah, we can dive in some more for sure.
I think Brandon had to step away for a bit. It's so crazy because those influences are like deep. It's like your environment, but it's also like what you're taught to believe in, like your core. I mean, I always don't know your parents, but like, I have this thing with Catholicism growing up Catholic. And I was thinking about this the other day, how it's like being religious has like such a negative connotation sometimes, where it almost feels maybe forced to believe or think or act a certain way. So I appreciate you saying, like, sometimes you just have to dive deep on, like, do I believe this? And, like, really figure it out for yourself. Because sometimes when especially parents are telling you, like, and setting that example, it's so easy to just fall into that without even really being cognizant of, do you want to do it? Is it, you know, yeah, what I mean? Like, is this my choice?
So, right. And I mean, as a kid, you're just like, you do as you're told.
Exactly. Yep.
I don't know, specifically from a military family. Like, my dad was never super hardcore with it either, but it was still like, hey, son, like, you get up, make your bed. Yeah, you know, it's just a lifestyle thing. So just carry it over to the religious aspect. I'm no longer religious. If my parents kind of listen to this, I'm sorry. But, like, you know, yeah, after breaking all that down and kind of doing some little deep dives, I noticed that a lot of people that I've met don't necessarily, or at least maybe I just don't know them well enough, but there's a lot of people that just don't end up doing that self-rediscovery, unfortunately. It's all upbringing still.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I need to say this little thing real quick, because I went back to therapy. We were talking about identity and stuff like that. And when you were talking about, like, being offended when someone says something, she said something and was like, I was talking about, like, being first generation and stuff like that and my parents. And she was like, well, if you feel this way, no parent is perfect, you know? And I was like, well, they did the best they could. Like, I got offended, right? Because, right. And then I had to, like, take a step back and be like, okay, she low-key has a point. It is really crazy once you kind of step back from that initial feeling of feeling offended and then doing the work and then thinking about it. And then You're just like, so I feel you when you're like maybe in your thoughts, but It's from like a good place. You know what I mean? So
for sure. Yeah, it's all just discovery and uncovery as well. When you can kind of do some of that self-therapy. Yeah, I think it's all good. It's all for the best.
What would you say some of the events that triggered or catalyzed the, I don't know what you would call it, a desire or a curiosity or whatever that thing is, to kind of question your own thoughts, to kind of question the labels, the identity markers that society placed on you. You know, at what point did you kind of like pause and kind of start looking around to see, you know, what paintings were in the room, so to speak?
Yeah, I think for me, like, I can think back to a very early instance where I kind of had some of the switch happen. It was like, specifically, I remember being like Bible study or like Sunday school. I was living in Washington at the time. So it was about like fifth grade. And we were talking about, they were saying something about, not to like keep going on sexuality, but like how gay people are going to hell just for like what they identify as or like the lifestyle that they lead. And that was like, that to me was like, yo, what are you talking about, bro? Like, isn't what we believe about God is love. And if everything comes from love, then who would want, if I love you, I wouldn't want you to suffer for eternity. So like, what does it matter if you forever who you like, you know? That was like the first question I had, especially in terms of like my religious identity. But then I just kind of like put it away. I was like, well, I mean, I don't know what I'm gonna do about it right now. I'm like 11, you know, what am I gonna do? So I just kind of rolled with it. Kind of kept going to church, and I was playing music in church for a long time. Got to college, the first time I was able to kind of break away from my parents and not have the, of course, I went to like a Christian university, Belmont University. It's like definitely Christian. Like, they say that in all of their mission statements and stuff. Partially why I chose to go there, but also partially because they gave me money. So like, you know, I'm broke. So like, give me that cash. When I got there though, and I was seeing all these other people around me, like, not that we had any sort of required chapel time like a school down the road did, but it was definitely like you could see the influence in everything that they do there. Like, we had to, in order for, like, if I say I wanted to have a girl over, even if she wasn't like my girl, if it was just like a a friend that is a girl, we had to have the door propped all the way open. They had to check in and out, had to be out by a certain time, all kinds of stuff that was just like super straight laced. In that environment and seeing how people from all over the place had similar upbringings, but how bought in they were to just everything that they believed to this certain point. And they hadn't questioned it. They just were like, this is what it is. And I believe what I believe. And you cannot tell me anything different. If you believe anything different, you are going to hell. That's like kind of the if this, then that, that they would all kind of follow through. In specific, that was starting to kind of change my thought process through the whole of my college career. And that kind of culminated with a young lady that I was dating my senior year, where she was super religious. I was still religious at that point. I would call myself a Christian. I was going to church, not every Sunday, but like often enough. At that point, still rocking my True Love Waits ring. I was still like really trying to be on that tip. She was wanting to be like a worship leader and things. So her dad was a pastor of a church in Texas and things. She had some core beliefs that were just in direct conflict of my core beliefs. She was still on that same thing of like, gay people are going to hell. I can't vote for the equality of a gay marriage because it's not what God would want for his people. And some other things like about just the belief in marriage and wanting to get married quickly. She was into like, I would say the whole, I don't know if you guys have heard like the Ring by Spring crowd or like the types of people that are like trying to be engaged and married by the time they get out of college. She was definitely on that tip. I don't want to like throw shade, but that's just kind of the nature of it. And I just wasn't on that time. Like I was trying to get to med school. I was trying to set up my own life before I could get to that level of somewhere with somebody. I was treating her like up until that point, that was the most bought into relationship I'd ever been. Like the way that I moved and I think the actions that I took, and I was like really trying to make it work. But then we get to like Valentine's Day. I was throwing all the gifts. I was doing the dinner. I was like, and I was still broke at that time. So I wasn't working. I was just living off loans. I was throwing all this stuff on Valentine's Day, right? Like really trying to make it work. But then we get to the day after Valentine's Day and she was like, hey, we got to talk. I said, yeah, what's good? She said, I was talking to God and he was telling me that we can't be together anymore. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, what's God sound like? You know, like, what are you talking about? And so she was saying that we can't be together anymore. You're not enough of a spiritual leader for me. I need somebody that can be stronger in their faith, that once we have a family, then I need a strong enough man of God that can lead us in that way. And I was like, okay. I mean, I guess if that's where your frame of reference is coming from, I can get it, but also, ow, like that hurts. Like I was trying really hard and, you know, doing all the things that they tell you to do and coming up and like, being a gentleman and all that stuff. But then at the end of the day, it just comes down to like, don't believe in God hard enough. And that's why we can't be together. That to me sounds like, who are you to judge where I am in my personal journey with whatever I believe, to then be like, you aren't good enough for me. And it's weird because like, yeah, I get it. And yeah, I understand that everyone has their standards and are entitled to those standards. But especially how it relates to a religious aspect, it's like, that seems counterintuitive to the belief system to me. Could be wrong. But after that, it's just like, it blew the whole thing up. Like the whole belief in God, the whole belief, at least in the Christian God, the whole belief in the tenets of Christianity and the Bible, that kind of blew that up for me in a lot of ways. So after that, I was like, yeah, okay, let's really dive really deep and like figure out what I'm about and what my experiences have been. Because to this day, I still don't know what that man sounds like or that woman or, I mean, whoever the entity is that people call God. Like I've never heard that voice, but it made me think about what does that mean for me? If I can believe in a higher power or whatever, or a greater connection to everything or to the universe, what does that sound like to me? And what can I identify with outside of these 10 commandments and things of the like? So that was really like the biggest thing that kind of blew up my world and made me question it all.
So it sounds like that event had, you know, kind of like a whiplash effect of like, you're almost seeking like recalibration, but at the same time, you're wondering what the standard was to begin with, you know?
Right.
Like, mm-hmm. Everything you said and you know, the way you behave in the last 24 hours is counterintuitive to the fundamentals of what you're claiming to be about. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I can see where that, like, there is definitely a fork in the road where a lot of people, I feel like, would kind of find something that fits the narrative and just not question anything else. But it sounds like it made you pause and tune things out to almost channel in on what your experiences have been able to tell you about the possible future experiences you may have, if that makes sense.
Exactly.
It's almost, you know, not like you press pause on, like, life, you know, but it seems like you press pause on your world is the way that you're perceiving it.
Yeah, perspective, for sure.
Yeah. How do you feel like moments like that that have made an impact on your perspective, how do you think it's helped you through those events, but also in the midst of, like, what you're in now as far as medical school and juggling? Because, you know, as minorities, we, especially in professions like this, like, there's still things that we have to juggle based on the environment that we're in, right? And you juggle that in a professional setting. We all do. How do you feel like those events that kind of made you rethink things, how does that, like, play a role into, like, what you think today, how you think today, or how does it help you navigate, like, similar instances, if that makes sense?
For sure. I think that ties directly into, like, my creative artistic philosophy. And I put it on my little rap sheet before about some of my mantras that I go by every day. The first thing that I say to myself almost on the daily, like in every interaction that I have, is the power and perspective. I actually saw a good visual on Twitter the other day that, like, was in direct line with that as well. It's like the idea that everything you see, even just from the physical, literal sense, everything you see has an infinite amount of truths to it. So, like, me looking at my computer right now, recording this podcast, I can see it from this vantage point, which is the truth of my existence right now. But also, if I were to be right here looking at the same computer, that would also be the truth. And so that can be extrapolated to every kind of thought process that you have. So, like my experience and what I go through every day is the truth. What you experience is also the truth. What they experience is also the truth. There's no one singular truth to be had, which is kind of when I found that, what I guess when I thought about that in my head, distanced me further from the, like, Christian ideal of God and what the universe is. Because a lot of evangelicals that I've been involved with, even my parents, like, they kind of believe in that one centric monolithic idea of truth. But I don't see that as consistent in my daily life. And so that even, to answer your question, is kind of how I think about everything in dealing with med school and dealing with trials and tribulations and all aspects. It's like the idea of how powerful perspective is and how true every perspective can be. As long as it's consistent and true with oneself and not, there's no ulterior motives and things. If it's true to a person's existence, then it can also be true, especially in adversity in the path that I'm on in med school. Understanding the idea that my reality is not the only thing that's happening here. It's true to what I experience, but also the person that I'm talking to at any given moment, Jen, Brandon, you guys' experience is just as true as mine and just as valid as mine as well, which is the same as the second motto I had on that. I've never learned how to say it, but it's called In Lekek Alakin. There's been some controversy of the history of it, whether or not it's truly tied to Mayan tradition, and if that's something they said to each other as a greeting or not, but it does represent a core belief that the Mayans had of the connectedness of the universe and how it directly translates loosely translates to like, you are another me. So you are just another me experiencing the same thing. Whether you call it the universe, whether you call it existence, you and I are the same, just from different perspectives, just from different vantage points. And so when I kind of discovered those things about my belief system, it's been easier to kind of go through the challenges and adversities of not only the schooling itself, but the extra shit that comes along with the schooling too. You know, just kind of the extra stuff we have to deal with on the daily, especially being minorities, especially being first generation.
Talk about the extra stuff, but in a very general sense, because I feel like you can dive into specific. I mean, we have a lineup of, like, specific examples just based off last year and a half alone, based on what we're involved with that school. But to put it in a broader terms, I'm interested because I have a very, that's also like one of the perspectives that I keep in my back pocket is like, I've heard not the same quote or phrase, but the concept of, you know, you experience like things that are within you, like as within, so without type of deal. Right. So,
right.
And one of the things like, and I mean, you know, my last year and a half, 2 years, like it's just been hectic to say the least. Right. Yeah. So it's like, as I mean, it has been for everybody, right? Like everyone's going through kind of like a little etch a sketch, you know, get shooken up. And one thing that I've been wondering, I'm wondering if you've thought about this, is when you do meet trials and tribulations, if it's through a circumstance or through a person, especially a person being offensive, and it not necessarily just like in a verbal way, but like for other people that may be listening that may encounter it in a nonverbal way, whether it's you know, a physical violation or just like blatant disrespect, what do you think that is? You know, like if we assume that that tenet would hold truth of experience seeing the universal subconscious, so when things like that come up, what do you think is going on? You get what I'm saying? Like, is it something like, I've wondered, not to, you know, like for me personally, like when things with my apartment that started flooding and in the middle of fucking exams, and then shortly after, like it was just one thing after another, and like I could not keep up with it. There was a point, like I remember in therapy talking about it, saying to the therapist, like, I believe like you can draw things to you, like events or people to you, almost like the law of attraction. But I don't like using that just because of how diluted it's been. But in a very plain form, like, yeah, attracting those type of things. I was questioning, like, what is it about me that attracted all this mishap, you know? Mm-hmm. And then, or do you have... And the way that I kind of, I don't know if it was just like a little get out of jail free card for me to be like, oh, well, you know, it could be very turbulent when I had like a counter weight on the end of the formula to like kind of balance out the perspective. But how do you navigate those events where it's like, it's a trial of tribulation, and also keeping in mind like, oh, I'm experiencing another part of me. Like, where are you when it comes to that?
Yeah, I think lately I've been trying to let myself understand and be comfortable with the idea that our consciousness experiencing this humanity for X amount of years is a, like, there's so many facets to that experience, and they're not all going to be pleasurable. And part of our humanity and our mortality is that there honestly must be unpleasurable parts of what we live through every day. You can see that as like physical manifestations in pain. You can experience that emotionally with pain as well. You can experience that experientially through adversity. But I've been learning to see all of those things as beauty in the human experience, that the valleys substantiate the peaks. It's the same concept that has been throughout different modes of thought in human theology for a while, like yin and yang, as above, so below, the same things that express balance in the universe, right? So like, you can't appreciate good things without having adversity and bad things. Like, nothing is inherently bad. It's like the way you look at it. I think the experience, whether or not it's pleasurable, I think all of those are a good part about our humanity and our ability to be human and experience those things for a minute. It's a privilege to be able to experience those things and experience the highs and lows and everywhere in between. Shifting the way that I look at stuff, even indirect, say like boards, right? So like boards in med school, super hard, tribulating time. Like, you feel like you're losing yourself. You feel like parts of yourself are dying. It's honestly the biggest adversity that I've faced thus far that I just kind of got through. Even in the midst of that, repeat to myself, like, this adversity is a privilege, and this will make the peaks of my life feel even higher. It will make the sweet sweeter, all those things, because I know how like unpleasurable, uncomfortable, hurtful this can be right now, taking stock and not necessarily enjoying, but like enjoying the opportunity to have all of what my human experience has to offer. Sadness, joy, relief, anger, grief, even all of those things are a beautiful part of what we can call our lives.
So it sounds like there's like balance to the scale, but it also doesn't sound like a passive, because you didn't gain those perspectives from just being born with them, right? Like you went through really crappy stages of learning what you learned, mm-hmm. right? Because that's mm-hmm. applied wisdom, essentially.
Right. And I mean, you had to kind of go through the five stages of grief about it, like denial that you can feel pain, like the denial that you have to be able to or have to feel pain, like to thinking that happiness is the goal or everything good is the goal. Eventually you go through all those stages and accept the fact that because we are living and breathing and our hearts are pumping, we're going to have adversity in our lives. Like it's just inevitable. And so how are you going to deal with that?
You're in such a weird place because there's still so much you are going to learn for the next, you know what I mean? Like for the next mm-hmm. chapter of whatever school brings. I mean, even right now, like you're going to take a year to do a fellowship, which is going to essentially put a pause on your academic strain because it's not as taxing.
Mm-hmm. Not nearly.
What are you looking forward to the most, hypothetical extra hours you get to just pause compared to like what, you know, what the lane is actually like?
Chiefly, I'm excited for the reconnection with myself. I feel like the way my identity shakes out is, yes, I'm in med school. Yes, I'm going to be a doctor, but like, those don't necessarily feel tied to who I am. It's like a thing that I'm doing in the moment and a thing that I've always said I would do by virtue of my mom and my upbringing. But like, in order to pursue that thing, I think of it as letting parts of myself die and letting my creativity die and letting my connection with truest self die. My therapist, however, would say that you don't build a house all at the same time. You may work on the bathroom one day. You may work on your master bedroom one day, but like you'll come back to that, right? Change my mindset, and to please my therapist, I will say that I was building a separate part of my house. And now I get to go back to the parts of my house that I super enjoy and can pour more into, especially having the more free time.
Go into the outlet that you do have or the extra rooms in your house that you're going to tend to.
Yeah.
And how that, I agree. What you're saying resonates with me because you just dive so deep into a whole new, mm-hmm. completely new universe, really. You learn so many new words in medical school that you literally become mm-hmm. fluent in a different language. Like the amount of words you need to become fluent in a language is like way less than half of what we learn in school. So it's like you're essentially learning a new language, you're becoming a new
culture.
A completely different new culture. Oh, we could talk about that for days, but
the culture, the system, the idea of professionality and things like that, which I have my qualms with.
It's like, it's like shed pieces of yourself to just discover like what you are like in those environments. Mm-hmm. And I know that, tell us about how like the art of what you're creating has like helped you, you know, with throughout the I guess that it's really like a maze, like an identity maze. You know what I mean?
Because
you think that you have to turn one way and then you turn there and then it's a dead end and mm-hmm. you're kind of making your way back, still as confused. I feel like that's kind of like the imagery I get when I'm trying to figure out not to get lost in the sauce.
Yeah, I get that.
So like how has your art played a part?
The way that I look at the world is direct reflected, which is a funny thing to say, in my art, because I focus on symmetry, fractal imagery, looking at things from different angles, looking at things close and far away, and seeing how things change depending on how or where you see them from. The idea of power and perspective is just the main thorough line through all of my work. You know, I have some of my drawings up and some of my pieces up, but they all have that idea of, oh, I see that, but you turn it this way, I also see that. which one is the truth? Well, which one is truest to you? Like, which way is up? Whatever way you feel is up. Like, when I give gifts of my prints to people, they're like turning it and looking at it, and they're like, I don't know how to look at this. And I'm like, well, what, how do you feel you should look at it? That's what I try to express in everything that I do. This year will allow me a lot more bandwidth to be able to pursue those things and kind of flesh some more of that out. I think that'll be a kind of through line for the rest of my life and how I express myself artistically. Just the idea of truth in every perspective. Yeah, I'm super excited to be able to dive into that this year. Along with the music part, playing with the Chiefs drumline is just like a good outlet to have. Not necessarily that I'm creating things, but expressing myself in ways that are not quite as possible to express in a professional setting. I'm super excited for those things coming up. Like, it's going to be such a good year of exploration.
I want to talk about that because I feel like, and I could just be talking about myself maybe, but I feel like almost we talk about this identity maze, you know, rediscovering yourself and what you like to do and what brings you joy and all these, like, going through all these emotions, right? And yeah. I almost feel like a lot of first generation folks have so much creativity that they can't tap into it because of, you know, their upbringing and their environment and maybe those pressures and things like that. So what would you say to anyone that is having a hard time trying to find different forms of expression besides, you know, away from school, away from work, away from other things, and kind of just what steps or encouragement would you give to folks that are trying to find something different that maybe their parents didn't teach them, right? So What are your thoughts on that?
I can speak from my point of view, like going back to the religious upbringing, like playing bass in church for like 6-7 years of my childhood, I thought that was like the extent of how I could express myself creatively. And anything outside of that was unholy or sinful or whatever. And then beyond that, just like no one would care either. So like I had to get over some of those hurdles in my life. A lot of those I didn't even start pursuing my truest creative self until 2018. So it's only been about 4 years now. Before that, I was stifled by those thoughts of self-consciousness, those thoughts even of like my dad not approving of me expressing myself. Perhaps some of the avenues that I've chosen to take to be able to access that part of me, i.e. recreational substances. That's a different topic for another day. But like once I was able to kind of how would I tell someone to try to mitigate those kind of blocks in their persona.
Yeah, or even like what you told yourself. Like you can walk it through your experience, or, you know, if you look back and wanna something that you want to tell yourself that you didn't really tell yourself now. Or like, you know what I mean, looking back.
Substances made it easier, but I think even beyond that, like yes, they made things easier, but it was still myself that decided to walk through the doors. So eventually, it was just an acceptance of the fact that there was too much within me that I could no longer hold back, that it came to a breaking point to where I had no choice but to just pursue the things that were truest to me. In my rap sheet, I was talking about find things that bring you joy and pursue them shamelessly. That really is what I told myself at the time, was like, you know, at the end of the day, like, you're not going to be able to please everybody. What you have is your experience. What you have is your life and your journey. If you are not the truest version of yourself, then you're really robbing yourself of your own joy and your own best life, right? So I think that's just the point to where I had to come with myself and in my own introspection, was that there was too much that I believe I needed to express, even if no one saw, even if no one noticed or appreciated. If I can put it out and still look at it and reflect upon it and meditate about it, it would bring me and myself comfort to know that I can identify with something in my pieces that kind of reinforce my mindset and my truth. So again, in speaking in just my own terms, like looking at the piece that I have on my laptop here, it, like I look at it and it reminds me of how much power there is in perspective and how much you can appreciate about an experience or person. But there's still a whole nother thousands of layers of that yet to be uncovered. And it's like that brings me comfort that there's an endless amount of things that I can learn and enjoy and dissect and that is what brings me personal joy. So anyone else in on their creative journey that is coming to that kind of block of maybe an external pressure, like the fear of judgment or things of the like at some point you are going to come to the realization that you just, there's no choice but to be truest to yourself. That's all that you have. You can't, it's doing yourself a disservice to be worried about someone else's view of you when all you have is what's coming out of your eyes or what's coming into your eyes. That's what I told myself. That's what I would tell somebody else too. You have to start chip away at it slowly, and it'll expand. The aperture will expand as you continue to pursue.
I feel like a lot of those times when you do have, you know, you're kind of on the edge of the cliff and contemplating whether you're going to jump or not, and you know, you do take the leap, but I feel like one of the big things that kind of holds you back is saying like, oh, I don't know what to do, or I don't know how to do mm-hmm. it. You know, we don't know where to start. What would you say your experience has been with those type of moments? Have you experienced where you kind of start something and in fact, you don't know how to keep going? Have you had mm-hmm. that experience, or has it been like where you start and then the path kind of starts showing itself along the way? Like, mm-hmm. have you had those type of experiences where it kind of, you know, you gain a little bit of wisdom or perspective on that?
Mm-hmm. I think that part has been true for everything that I've ever done, that the path illuminates itself the further you walk down. Even in med school, right? Like, I had the idea to go and the idea to be a doctor and things. I would get roadblocks at every point. So like, didn't do only MCAT the first time, got rejected the first 3 times from med school. As I got rejected that last time, I heard about KCU and their master's program, and I applied, they let me in. I got through the master's program and I just tried my best, and they eventually offered me an interview. And it's just like, the things just, as if you are true to your pursuits, that's why knowing yourself is so important, and knowing what brings you joy, then as long as you are true to yourself. And I learned this from you, Brandon, is like, true hearts never lose, or pure hearts never lose. Like, it's if you're truest to who you are and know yourself to be, then there is no losing in that path. And again, like the light will become brighter the further you go. So that's true with my creative pursuits. Like, every time I start down or start a project, or like in my jewelry and in my photography stuff and in my design stuff, like, I don't think I've thought about something and was able to produce that in the real world. Like, every time I start something, it manifests itself in a way. That's kind of one of the ideas that I have about my personal journey, is that I am simply like an aperture or a lens, a conduit for things to pass through and flow through, and me to bring to life. So like, the things that I've produced don't even necessarily come from my conscious, from my like realized state of being. They come from like something else, like it may be part of me that I'm just unaware of, subconscious, call it whatever, but it's not that I'm actively thinking about it and materializing it. It's like, hey, I look down and it's done. And it's something that like feels solidified and fortified. And that's kind of how I feel about my journey in medicine as well. It's like, I'm just here. I'm pursuing as shamelessly as I can. The process is making me wary a little bit, and the system is making me wary, but like, the pursuit of it is just kind of materializing itself as I keep going. And as I keep knocking on doors and I keep asking and connecting with different people, those things just start to make themselves become true and evident. So yeah, I would say that the latter part of that is the most true from my experience, that it's just, you keep going, things just kind of appear.
Really refreshing to hear, because it sounds, you know, our dreams are like just on the other side of the most simple step, which is mm-hmm. just start, or just do start what you're gonna do, like, be, you know, yeah, your actions, like, yeah, that's really mm-hmm. it sounds super simple, but that's kind of where I feel like a lot of us, you know, playing pump fake, like, and it's crazy just how long like the domino effect could go once you decide mm-hmm. to kind of, because it sounds like you were like, okay, it was a thought conviction, like, okay, I want to go to med school, and then you have been collecting L's your whole way, but the thing about it is you're on the way, like the actual way, you know what I mean?
Right, still on the way. Yeah. And I don't know if it was like that thought was so true from that age, that I've just followed the line and the thread and kept tugging on the thread, and slowly everything else unraveled after that. I suppose that's true. But I mean, just getting past the first bit of apprehension is the hardest. And I think that's true in, you know, almost anything. Like, you're looking at the cliff, like you said, and thinking about how scary it would be to jump off, but then you jump off and you're in the water and it wasn't that bad. And you've crossed the threshold.
There's a lot to unpack there. Yeah, I mean, I feel like there's the experience, and then the perspective resonates to a point where it kind of reminds me, in the beginning steps, did you ever have a fear of, like, not having friends in the area that you were pursuing, or the fear of, like, losing people along the way? Because I'm sure there's people in folks' lives where, or there's people that know that the pursuit of their dreams is going to kind of isolate them from their circle of, or the community, essentially, right? So how true was that for you? And did the path illuminate itself? Did you find a safe haven of people in the midst of your pursuit? Because, like, for me, one of the bigger, like, I don't know, when I moved from Salinas, like, it was difficult to move from one environment to such a drastically different one. And especially at that age group, where the external becomes the most influential of, like, the internal, you know, during teenage years. It was like trying to pursue things like going to college, even going away from college from here, was like away from, like, a place I already had to learn how to navigate, you know, going to even deeper into, like, the country. It's like a scary thought to think that I'm going to lose myself and cut off myself from, you know what I mean? Like,
And you might get some flack from people too, right? Like, some of the homies might just not get it.
And it goes back to iridescence, the vocal point of, or like the point of view of your art, where it's an action being perceived from two different perspectives, you know, because it can already be isolating, but then your external, you know, environment can also cause more chaos internally. For, you know, for people that are, that the only thing holding them back is just how lonely it does get. How would you, you know, define lonely versus being alone? And how have you found, like, peace in the isolation that med school brings?
That's tough, because it's a challenge for me on the daily, especially, like, I moved from everything I knew to be able to come pursue this. I tried as I might to stay in Tennessee, to stay close to my mom and close to my friends, like my closest friends. But I think I realized that, one, that my truth was more important. And after receiving the blessing from my mom that she wouldn't, like, hate me for leaving her, that she wanted me to pursue my dreams, that was a first step for me in being accepting of isolating myself for a minute. But then even greater than that was, again, realigning myself with my truth. Like, okay, I'm doing this because I feel that I can affect change in this area in a different way than has been done before. By virtue of my upbringing, by virtue of me being the first one in my family to do it, my perspective will bring about a shift in how this system will work and how we look at things in this professional arena. Knowing that, feeling that that is my purpose and staying aligned with that purpose is paramount in helping me get through my loneliness and getting through the adversity of just being alone. But also, in today's age with technology, it is easier to stay connected with the people that are still real, like the people that really get it. I think that's the hardest part that I had to go through, was identifying those folks that just weren't riding with me or for me for real. Like, they were the fair weather friends. They were the fair weather folks that just kind of, like, were with me because they enjoyed my company and my energy, people that were on the take of that energy. But then going through this process, learning the folks that could be my foundations and my rocks through it, and then trying my best in the downtimes, in the little kind of windows of opportunity we have to keep the thread of connection between us. Those folks have just been like everything to me. even most notably, like my best friend back in Nashville, Alexa, her and her husband, like when they moved into their apartment several years ago, and it was around the same time that I was moving to Kansas City, they told me they got a 2-bedroom apartment so that I would have somewhere to stay when I came back to Nashville, just because I didn't have a home. Like, I don't really have a place to go back to. My mom's in a nursing home. Like, my dad lives in Virginia and my brother is also living in Virginia. So like, I don't really have like a home base per se. The fact that someone could be so real with me in that, like, and care for me so much that they would allow me a space in their home whenever need be, that was crazy to me, like insane. And just it reminded me of the ability for real and true connection, despite us being however far, like 600 miles away, 9-hour drives away. And that stayed true for the past 4 years that I've been in Kansas City. Like, I just got back. I was there 2 weeks ago and I texted her probably a couple days beforehand, like, hey, I don't really have anywhere to stay in Nashville. Do you mind if I crash? And she just hit me back up instantly and was like, yeah, anytime. Don't even ask. Just let us know the days that you're going to be here and like you're welcome in our home. I think that was one, like, means the world. I could cry just like thinking about it. But like identifying those folks that are really about your journey, that really like see the vision in kind of the same way that you see it, support you through the lack of you being able to give to them in the same ways that they're able to give to you. Those are the truest of friends, the truest of family that can understand that you just kind of got to be locked down for a second and doing your own thing. Coming out the other side of it, they know I got them. And I tell them all the time that like, once this is done, once I'm able to achieve this, then like, I got y'all for real. Like, this is, y'all have been too real, too true. So I think that's the biggest thing is to identify those folks. And even when I got to med school, finding that specific group of people, Brandon included, like they're illuminated itself, this like core group of individuals that I could like rest on and not only study with or bitch about med school to, but like they really hold me down in my like in my truest forms. Like I can talk to them about like my inner workings and my introspections, and I can really like rely on them to hold me down. So it's finding those like real true individuals. And I said, again, I said this on my rap sheet of like finding like-minded individuals and remaining connected to them in however the smallest of ways. So it's really is true that I've had to find that in all parts of my experiences, just finding those like-minded people that I could connect with that really get it, that understand. But it's hard for sure. It's difficult.
It sounds a lot easier than it is, huh?
Yeah, without a doubt. But even and even then, it still feels lonely. You know, still feels like we got each other. Like you and I, we'll hit each other up every few weeks. You know, it'll be like we ain't never. Like I just saw you yesterday. You know what I'm saying? But like in that in between time, like you'll still be so dug into the grind of everything, and your self talk will become so negative, and you can really get in some dark places. But every time we reconnect, it's like, oh shit, there is, I got a homie. Like there's somebody out there that I can, and put everything back, you know?
Yeah. I think there's a lot of things that we could take from this and make a part two, especially with the path kind of illuminating itself and all of like the real world examples you brought to this last question.
I'm just so happy that you're here. Like, it is honestly amazing to listen to you, to hear your thought process, to just be so shameless in pursuing your own sense of self, peeling back all those layers. It's really been an honor. And I'm just thinking about how, like, in our old, a past episode, she was talking about being here. She's been able to, like, rediscover herself. And just a piece of humble pie real quick, because I think I need it for myself. It's like the whole concept of this series is like family and freedom and then first generation dreams. And it makes me think of how like our parents or the generation before them really were going through like poverty, war, like political strife. And they had all these like external things going on where they were just surviving, or like, you know, they didn't have that freedom to really pursue passion, creativity, and all this stuff. And it's like when you go back to like power perspective and like looking at different angles, I just encourage everyone listening to just do that for themselves. It's so encouraging listening to you, and I encourage everyone to sit with their thoughts, I guess you could say, because like you said, the more you walk, the more the path illuminates itself. And so powerful. I'm super thankful. And I know we got to cut it short, but definitely a part two, because it was so amazing listening to you.
Thank you guys so much. It's been great.
Especially with the kind of duality of like the outside inside world, you know, I hope people picked up on just how real and, you know, not even normal. Normal is a weird word because that's a standard in and of itself, but it's just part of the human existence to stop, pause, reflect, and then kind of ask yourself the questions that are being begged to ask, like, am I really this? Am I really that? What am I believing? Because believing all the good stuff can take you to all the good places, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to know if there's like anything in your heart or any like lasting things you just want to leave someone with. You said so many powerful key things to really just like go back and think about. But if there's anything else you want to like leave us with.
Again, I could keep going and diving in, but truly like the thing that keeps me going every day is that idea of perspective, that everyone you encounter has a lifetime of stories and a lifetime of experience that you just don't know about. Keeping that in mind with every interaction allows me to kind of be in a more calmer state, I guess, in those interactions. But then also when I go home and I'm thinking about my negative self-talk starts to creep in, as it does for a lot of folks. You know, everyone is so wrapped into their stories and so worried about themselves, but any sort of possible criticism that you think could come from other individuals, they're too preoccupied with what they got going on to really care about what you have. That apprehension that you have is valid indeed, but I would rest assured that you have your own story to tell as well. So if you are feeling inclined to tell that story, whether that be creatively, whether that be through your profession, through whatever kind of path that you decide to take, your story is worthy of being told, and you should do so in the most truthful and unashamed way possible. You have the right to that, assuredly the ability to that. Everyone just, whoever's listening, if you're struggling with that first step of, I guess, stepping through to your most absolute truth, that you are owed that in this journey. I think we only have a finite amount of time in these bodies and these vessels to share with and connect with others. I think you would be doing yourself a disservice to keep that inside, potentially doing others a disservice as well. Speak your truth wherever that may be and however that may be as well. That's my encouragement to everybody.
You just wrapped up this whole podcast, because let me tell you, that is why we're here. I think it's all a good emphasis and reminder that your story does matter and your perspectives matter, your experiences, whether you're witnessing it, whether you're living it, whether you're, it's relationships. And thank you for that reminder. Thank you for being here today. Can't wait for a part two.
Thank you. Thank you.
And I hope you have a good, I can't wait. I really can't wait. I feel like there's so much happening going on, and the more you get used to like discerning you it gets easier.
Yes.
So I'm looking forward to a part two. So thank you for me, from Brandon, and from all of us.
Thank you. Much love.